Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
I will speak up.
Here's John Williams.
If you have trouble hearing, this is John. I'll make sense of that reference in just a minute. Hey, we're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here until 3 o'clock on WGN Radio weekdays, and then on Saturdays, listen to this show from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. On a one and a two. That's a little shout-out to our newsman, Domiti Pongo, who also joins me on the Saturday broadcast from 10 a.m. until 12 noon.
What is that?
Saturday, we talked about people who have trouble hearing.
Didn't catch that.
And I put on my phone the app that our guest was referencing, Domiti. You've got to get this thing.
You've been playing with it all weekend, haven't you?
I've been looking at it. So the details are at on my Facebook page. Just go to my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. It'll probably be one or two items down now, but it'll be very easy to see. There is an app you get on your phone. It's a sound meter. It'll tell you what is too much sound, what's too high a noise level for your health. It'll also record the total amount of sound that you're exposed to, because our audiologist expert on Saturday said, it's not just did you hear a loud sound, but what's the totality, what's the dose, was the word she used, of sound that you consume in a given day. And too much is bad. The same way you could have a beer today and a beer tomorrow, but you don't want to drink 100 beers today. And the totality, the dose you get is critical. And so it's this nifty little hearing, it's not hearing aid, it's a sound meter. It's an app, it's free, and all of the details on that thing are, so when you walk into a restaurant, or if you're at a concert, or if you're in a room and you go, oh, man, this is punishing me, I can't hear, you could check the volume on this thing. How much noise? It's got a little meter, 92, 95, 98, that sort of thing, decibels. So that's on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. And as we were talking about people who consume a lot of sound, the reason we were talking about it was because of everybody walking around with buds in, listening to podcasts, listening to music. As we were talking about that, Domiti got very concerned. Because Dome's always either got headphones on for work or buds in for pleasure, and sometimes he does both. He'll have one ear listening to music and the other ear listening to his job.
Whoa.
I know. Talk about multitasking.
I know, it's crazy.
That's talented.
Props to Domiti Pongo.
It helps me stay focused, man. Jazz music calms you down, keeps you focused. You got
people
yelling all over the place.
You were positively nervous. You were like, now wait a minute. Now what's going to happen to me here? And I don't blame you. Ask Steve Bertrand if you can only listen to so much sound in your life, and then you start to suffer. So the details on my Facebook page. Thank you, Domiti.
That was a really good segment, by the way.
It was. And the podcast of that, I think, is worth listening to. I'm telling you, the podcast of that is worth listening to, too. Elif, talk on the radio. How can people hear the podcast of that Saturday segment? What should we tell them to do?
WGNradio.com and click on the shows tab. Go to John Williams and then the respective...
Right. So Saturday at 10:30 was when it was. Saturday morning.
And her name should be in there in the description.
Yeah. The president spoke today to the world along with Vladimir Putin. I'm going to play for you a couple of sound bites, then we'll invite our guest. The president had a lengthy meeting, just Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump and their two translators. No other note takers, no other advisors. Makes you wonder what they can possibly accomplish. I mean, so they'll know what they say, but since the world doesn't trust either of them very much, what was the purpose of that? I don't know the answer to that question, but I do know afterwards they held a joint press conference there in Helsinki. So let's just play a couple of sound clips from that, and then we'll bring in our guest. Just two to start. Early in his remarks, President Trump said that, yes, he did ask about the meddling.
During today's meeting, I addressed directly with President Putin the issue of Russian interference in our elections. I felt this was a message best delivered in person. Spent a great deal of time talking about it.
Right.
And President Putin may very well want to address it.
Well, how about you address it? What did you say and what did he say, Mr. President? But he didn't say. Towards the end of their about 20-minute press conference, an Associated Press reporter asked this question.
Just now, President Putin denied having anything to do with the election interference in 2016. Every U.S. intelligence agency has concluded that Russia did. My first question for you, sir, is who do you believe? My second question is, would you now, with the whole world watching, tell President Putin, would you denounce what happened in 2016, and would you warn him to never do it again?
So let me just say that we have two thoughts. You have groups that are wondering why the FBI never took the server. Why haven't they taken the server? Why was the FBI told to leave the office of the Democratic National Committee? I've been wondering that. I've been asking that for months and months, and I've been tweeting it out and calling it out on social media. Where is the server? I want to know, where is the server, and what is the server saying? With that being said, all I can do is ask the question. My people came to me, Dan Coats came to me and some others. They said they think it's Russia. I have President Putin. He just said it's not Russia. I will say this. I don't see any reason why it would be, but I really do want to see the server. But I have confidence in both parties. I really believe that this will probably go on for a while, but I don't think it can go on without finding out what happened to the server. What happened to the servers of the Pakistani gentleman that worked on the DNC? Where are those servers? They're missing. Where are they? What happened to Hillary Clinton's emails? 33,000 emails, gone, just gone. I think in Russia they wouldn't be gone so easily. I think it's a disgrace that we can't get Hillary Clinton's 33,000 emails. So I have great confidence in my intelligence people, but I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. And what he did is an incredible offer. He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators with respect to the 12 people. I think that's an incredible offer. Okay? Thank you.
I think what's incredible is that the president used the word server 7 times in a question of who do you trust, every U.S. intelligence agency or Vladimir Putin. And he essentially said he's going to go with Vladimir Putin. Or what he's really saying is that's not a relevant question. That's not even important. What's important is, what about Hillary Clinton's email? He mentioned that twice. And what about the server for the DNC, which he mentioned 7 times in 2 minutes and 12 seconds?
Well, and the other thing is, at the end there, it's hard for me to understand, because that is the definition of putting the fox in charge of the hen house. I mean, it is, John. It can't be any clearer than that. He's saying, well, President Putin is willing to help us investigate his agents who attacked us. And that's a great thing.
And he put a bunch of caveats with that, too. As long as it's reciprocal, we want to be able to look at your stuff, and we have this treaty, and we'll follow the protocol. Mueller needs to petition it, and then we'll look at, so, you know, whatever. I mean, a lot got lost in that answer, but maybe that doesn't even matter, Steve. At the end of the day, they're saying, well, the Russians will help us find out what happened with Russian interference.
Right.
That's the ticket. Joel Ostro joins us again on WGN Radio. He's a Russian affairs expert and professor over at Benedictine University. Joel, thanks for joining us. How have you been?
I've been well, John. Good to be on with you again.
What's your reaction to what you've heard Steve and I discuss or to the press conference today?
Well, my students would be familiar with the question that I ask, and that is, what truths does our president hold to be self-evident? Among the many lies that he's been called out upon, on January 20 of 2017, he took a vow to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. That's the only oath that's specified in the Constitution, but all officials must swear an oath before becoming officials of the United States government, and they are sworn by statute to preserve and protect the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By extension, the president is obligated to defend the country against all enemies, foreign. But on this trip, our friends have become our foes, and our foes, as has been the case throughout Trump's presidency, have become his friends. I don't say our friends, they've become his friends.
What do you make of his answer when asked, who do you trust, U.S. intelligence, or who do you trust, Vladimir Putin?
I truly believe he trusts Vladimir Putin. He has authoritarian tendencies, Trump does, and authoritarian leaders tend to stand together. His friends are Putin, Kim Jong-un, and the like. He has praised Erdogan of Turkey. He likes Viktor Orban of Hungary. His friends are authoritarians, and those who are committed to the values of liberty, equality, freedom, freedom of the press,
what
freedom
would an
of association.
Answer, what would a satisfactory of, like what would a satisfactory answer have sounded like to you? So he's asked that question by the Associated Press reporter. Thank God that guy got a chance to ask that question. That was on everybody's mind. It's like the guy is right there. Call him on it. We weren't there for the two-hour meeting, so here in public, just call him on it. President Trump, just say, it's terrible that the Russians meddled with our election. He didn't do that, right?
He did not do that. You know, this president, so there were many analyses before this meeting took place that the United States ought to be in a position of strength relative to Russia. And what that means was, if we had a competent president from either party, this is not a partisan thing, from either party, the United States should be in a strong position in relation to Russia right now. But this president is not. And the only right thing for him to have done would have been to take the advice of his Secretary of Defense, of his Chief of Staff, of his other intelligence and security advisors, and not held this meeting in the first place, because he was not going to do the United States of America any good by meeting with Putin at this time.
So after Rosenstein's,
he should not have met.
After Rosenstein's indictments come down, then
correct,
they should have canceled the meeting.
Canceled them. Yeah, I mean, he shouldn't. He was being warned against doing this in the first place by Mattis and Kelly in particular. But he insisted on going through with it. Certainly after the indictment, he had to cancel it.
Okay,
but
hold
he didn't.
On. Let me throw in a couple of listener questions. Joe,
sure.
You're on WGN Radio. Joe, what's your question or comment? Hi.
Hi, John. I just wanted to ask, well, first of all, I think Trump had that meeting by themselves so that no witnesses were going to be there. Secondly, I can't understand that he's going through all these motions, saying what he's doing and aligning himself with all these dictators and not being, why isn't treason coming up against him?
Joel, what's your reaction to that? Is that hyperbolic?
Not entirely. For the first part of it, at every summit, a true summit between U.S. and, well, then Soviet and now Russian leaders, there have been one-on-one meetings with translators. But in the context of and subordinate to wider meetings that included the heads of state with advisors in real negotiations and substantive discussions. And those one-on-one sessions have been brief and at times as ways to, after having log jams have been identified, to see if there was a way that they could come up with ideas to break through those log jams, which they would then bring back to their experts.
Right.
And so the caller is correctly right. Joe was right that this was the summit, which is why, you know, was it really a summit? Whatever. This was the summit. It was all about this one-on-one meeting. And perhaps he didn't want witnesses. More than likely, he didn't want his experts there because his experts are experts, and they didn't want him to hold this in the first place.
Okay, then what about this? Joe, thank you for the call and the question. Donna, you're on WGN. What was your question? Donna, hi.
Hi. We have a theory that when he was affiliated with his beauty pageant in Russia several years ago, that maybe he was caught in a compromising position. Maybe somebody in Russia has something on Trump, and that's why he's so he keeps talking about Trump as his friend and Trump will be able to do something. I believe that he could be being blackmailed or something is going on between Putin and Trump that's illegal with all of his business dealings. Something is going on. There's no reason why this man should have a meeting for 2 hours without any witnesses other than the translator.
Okay, that's an interesting question, Donna. And actually, that question was posed to the two of them. Let's do this. I'm going to pause. We'll come back and play the question and answer that Donna just asked as it was put to Putin and Trump. And Joel, you can comment next on WGN.
Joe, he was asked specifically that. Somebody said to Vladimir Putin, do you have any specific compromising information about the president? And he did not answer that question.
Well, he said that he had no idea he was in town, that there were a lot of other businessmen in town.
And there was 500 business people in town.
And when Putin, and Trump just sort of didn't register.
Right. Well, but and I get that. I mean, that makes sense. Donald Trump is not even a candidate when this allegedly happens, right? And so, and there's 500 guys in town, so, and so Putin and Trump aren't colluding or talking at the time. He didn't even know that he was there, right, Steve?
Yeah, but I suspect, I mean, your guests can say this more clearly, if there are people of influence, the Russian apparatus is aware of them and is watching them.
Well, and it doesn't mean that something didn't happen and they aren't able to use it later. I mean, the fact that Putin didn't know Trump at the time doesn't mean that afterwards Putin didn't find out that they have some compromising information about Donald Trump. To be honest with you, this all sounds kind of fictional to me anyway. But Joel, what's your thought about all of that?
All right. So there's 2 points here. First of all, there's that dossier held lots of compromising information about then candidate Trump. You don't have to go to the pee-pee tape to need compromising information. So that's number one. But number two, both Putin's response and kind of this whole conversation entirely missed the point. Donna asked about, you know, whether there was some comprehensive information that Putin is lording over Trump. Putin doesn't need that. That's not the game he plays. When he came to power in 2000, I published an article, or I wrote it, maybe I don't know when it was published, in which I described Putin then accurately as a former KGB hack. He was a mid-level agent. He's obviously a much more important figure at this time, but he plays on the same tools that he learned and mastered as that mid-level KGB agent. Namely, he identifies chaos, instability, or insecurity around the world, and in the classic Soviet playbook, finds ways to increase that chaos or instability if it's in the Western democracies with the purpose of gaining Russian influence. He's not a genius. He's not a puppet master controlling all the strings. He doesn't know what kind of advantage Russia will necessarily get from a situation when the opportunity plays. He's an opportunist who identifies and uses the tools at his country's disposal, which are quite vast, to increase the chaos and disorder in the hopes that Russia can then gain advantage. Because by destabilizing or weakening the democracies, the alliance, our trading bloc, Russia stands to benefit.
Joel Ostrow
in Putin's eyes.
Political science professor and an expert on Russia at Benedictine University. I want to play one more soundbite for you.
Sure.
And LF, let's go with cut three. This is a question to Vladimir Putin. He was asked, why should Americans trust you?
For President Putin, if I could follow up as well, why should Americans and why should President Trump believe your statement that Russia did not intervene in the 2016 election, given the evidence that U.S. intelligence agencies have provided? And will you consider extraditing the 12 Russian officials that were indicted last week by a U.S. grand jury?
Well, I'm going to let the president answer the second part of that question. But as you know, the whole concept of that came up perhaps a little bit before, but it came out as a reason why the Democrats lost an election, which, frankly, they should have been able to win because the Electoral College is much more advantageous for Democrats, as you know, than it is to Republicans. We won the Electoral College by a lot, 306 to 223, I believe.
Actually, he got that number wrong, too. But isn't that interesting? So Trump is asked, why should we trust Putin? And he said he won the Electoral College. And by the way, he got the numbers wrong. What a bizarre answer to that question.
It's worse than bizarre. Getting back to the point I was making earlier about the sowing of disorder, that is what Trump does. And he sows disorder, which plays to the advantage of Russia, which is why the former director of the CIA, John Brennan, overtly called Trump's statements and actions treasonous, rising to and exceeding the level of high crimes and misdemeanors.
Why couldn't Donald Trump have said, I do trust the U.S. intelligence. I do believe they meddled. Here's the distinction. Meddling and collusion are not the same thing. Yes, the Russians meddled. No, I didn't know about it. I didn't cooperate. I did not collude. It would be very easy. And wow, would he have scored a home run with the planet if he had said the Russians meddled and he turned to him and said, don't ever do that again. You want sanctions. You've never seen sanctions like you're going to get. But he doesn't even approach that. He doesn't tippy-toe around it. He strides with Putin on it. I don't understand why Donald Trump didn't make the distinction between meddling and collusion.
Which is why the serious people in his cabinet cringe every time he speaks. You know, it's not just Brennan. It's not just people who served under Democratic presidents, Michael Hayden, who served as National Security Agency Director under George W. Bush, and many Republicans have come out slamming Donald Trump for his words and his actions. He is playing into Putin's hands, but again, not just Putin, but really the desires of all authoritarians and dictators. It seems to be who he stands with in his attacks on a free press and on individual journalists, even to the point where one could ask whether he incites to violence.
Poli-sci professor, you know, at Benedictine University and Russia expert Joel Ostro. Joel, I'm out of time. This isn't the last time we'll visit, probably this week, certainly next. Thanks for your time and expertise today.
Anytime, John.
That's Joel Ostro over at Benedictine U. Thomas Jefferson and I are on stage Saturday, August 18th. We asked TJ to join us and answer a couple of questions about then and now in the next hour. Stick around for that. David Hochberg is in our studios, too. You know David Hochberg. Hello, Mr. Hochberg. How are you?
Good, John. How are you?
David Hochberg of...
Team Hochberg at Pearl Mortgage.
So we got this text or email from a listener. It said, I need to hear you guys talk frankly about another possible real estate bubble with Steve Bertrand or John Williams. I've now seen margin calls and too big to fail, and I'm fairly clear that 2008 happened because of really bad people upstream from you betting on failure. But this year, Chicago has decided that we are whole again, and it's trying to double the taxes from last year. What bubble? Okay, I don't even know what this person's talking about. Do you?
Yeah, kind of. She thinks I went back and forth with her before I sent it over to you to make sure that I understood what she was talking about. She's concerned that with the real estate taxes in the great state of Illinois, that the home values are going to explode because the real estate taxes are so high.
Home values are going to explode, meaning they're going to go down.
In terms of they're going to pop and go back down like we experienced in 07.
Why would that happen? Because people can't afford their property taxes.
Exactly, because people can't afford their property taxes. And what's happening is we have so many layers of government in this great state of ours, which is absolutely freaking ridiculous, is that it's going to cap out home values too. As well, because what the general listener doesn't understand, and the people of the county government obviously don't understand, is that for every $525 a month that you increase property taxes, that's a $100,000 mortgage payment. Okay, that's the equivalent of a $100,000 mortgage payment.
I don't know what that means.
So when you increase real estate taxes by $6,000 a year, okay, $500 a month, right? $6,500 a year, $7,000 a year, you just eliminated $100,000 worth of real estate value, because that's what it costs to finance $100,000.
Wait a minute, because I wouldn't be able to, because I'm going to write a check each month.
Right.
If I'm spending more on property taxes, then I'm able to buy less in home.
Right, and you're going to be able to qualify for less of a mortgage. Okay, because that $525, instead of going to your mortgage payment, that will enable you to buy a more expensive house, is not going to go to the county.
That doesn't reduce the value of the property. It reduces my ability to buy that property.
Well, it caps the value because people are not going to be able to afford those homes.
I guess, right. So what is the value of a home? It's what I'm willing to pay.
It's what the next
person. If I can't pay for it, then essentially that home is now less valuable.
Right. You've
because
got
of property taxes.
You've got people in McHenry County that are listening right now that are paying $8,000 a year in real estate taxes for a $200,000 property. That's freaking crazy.
That's too high.
That's ridiculous. And thank God Jack Franks is out there, who's the county board president, who basically got into office and said, We're slashing 10% across the board.
But have you seen the property taxes in places like LaGrange or LaGrange Park or Western Springs? Oh, my gosh.
Sure.
It's insane.
Northbrook, Glenview,
$16,000, $18,000.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
I mean, that's a mortgage payment for people. That's just the property taxes.
That's just the property taxes.
And they get it. That's the thing that amazes me. And people buy those houses. They sell those houses.
Sure.
It does happen.
Well, what's happening now in like Lincolnshire and those type of places off of 83... In the Stevenson School District, you've got houses that once were valued at $800,000-$900,000 that are valued at $600,000 because the property taxes are $18,000 to $20,000 and they're on well water. So the problem is that in certain areas, property values are capped.
They're on well water. That just caught up with me. But really, you sometimes ask, what's the service I'm getting?
Sure. Sure.
If I'm going to give you $20,000 a year, what am I getting? I'm still only going to call one police officer. There's only going to be one fire truck.
Right.
You know, I mean, I only have one road in front of me.
Right.
What am I getting for all that extra money?
Exactly.
Well, you're getting schools. You're getting those people have nice schools.
You're getting the Stevenson School District, high school school district,
which is one of the best.
It's one of the best in the country, without question. But you also have all of these different layers of government. You've got the mosquito abatement program. You've got this township has got this layers of government, and that township within this and that. It's absolutely ridiculous what's going on here in this state, and it's drowning us in real estate taxes.
Right, but the listener said she thinks that we are approaching another real estate bubble
because of the real estate taxes.
Yeah, and the real estate bubble that we all went through in 2007,
right.
8, 9
was smoke and mirrors. It has nothing to do with real estate.
Well, it didn't have anything to do with taxes. That had to do with extending credit to people who couldn't afford it. People were upside down on their loans.
Right. And nowadays you need, you know, not only to show your W-2s, pay stubs, bank statements, tax returns, you need a DNA sample, urine sample, stool sample, and a saliva sample.
I do not think you need a stool sample. So then is it possible that we are, though, upside down? Or do you think that the right people are being able to buy homes?
I don't think there's a... I disagree with her assessment that we have a bubble. I don't think that there's a bubble. I think... Well, I know for a fact, you ask any builder out there, there hasn't been any major building going on for the past 10 years. There hasn't been any cornfields being blown out or soybean fields being blown out like we had craziness between 03 and 2007 when everything stopped. Okay, you went further west. Every cornfield that used to be a cornfield or soybean,
it was blown out
and they put up track homes. And then guess what you had to build? You had to build schools. You had to build police. You had to build fire.
You still have. You'll have some of these areas like that where there will be the streets.
Sure.
And some of the lights, and that's it. And then just weeds.
It's such a shame. I did a loan for a couple in Island Lake. I had to go down this street. There was a dairy farm on the left. I'm like, where the heck is this? Thank God for GPS. I had to go down this road about a mile and a half, turn right. I passed two dairy farms on my left. I turned in. It was a beautiful paved street with curbs and everything. House, empty, 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 empty. House, empty, empty. Go down a mile to the end of the cul-de-sac, four houses around the cul-de-sac, and that was it. Okay, and there were still water, these gigantic water tanks where the farmers would roll out into the fields to water the plants, stuck right in the middle of where houses were supposed to be.
What's the moral of that story? What are you telling me?
Well, the moral of the story is back in the day when it was wild, wild west days of lending and people that didn't qualify for loans got loans, that's not like it is right now. I mean, you have to verify every single thing that you're doing. And on the loans, the non-qualified mortgage loans, where we're doing bank statement loans for a lot of self-employed individuals, we're not going to 100% like we did before. We're going to 70, 80%.
Are we making it too hard or too easy or just right to borrow money to buy a house
right now? It's just right.
It's where it should be.
It's exactly where it should be.
So whatever it was that drove that housing bubble...
It's not here today.
Which was also just the fact that people were losing their jobs. I mean, you know, no fault of their own. Some folks just suddenly didn't have income.
Sure.
That's not driving it today. And our property taxes... Over-inflating homes right now? Is there a bubble relative to
property? No, it's under-inflating homes.
Well,
undervaluing homes.
Right, yeah. So is that a real thing right now?
No, because there's an equilibrium, right? Okay, I can't afford... If the real estate taxes on that home were $6,000 less, I could pay $100,000 more because I could qualify for $100,000 more mortgage. So all of these county layers of government and all you elected officials on the county level, listen up! Because you're destroying property values with all these layers of government. And down in Springfield, you're destroying property values with all these layers of government. And I know there's some elected officials down there that are making an attempt to consolidate these layers of government, that you have pensions, you have salaries, you have staff, you have everything, expenses. You've got all of this stuff going on. We don't need all these layers of government. You need a major consolidation to help cut these taxes here in the state of Illinois.
The number's 312-981-7200. You got a question or comment? Thank you to the listener who posed the question. 312-981-7200. This is WGN. We got about 2 or 3 minutes here, David, just to finish the conversation about where are we on the real estate market. One of our listeners thought, oh, I'll bet we're in for another bubble. She was thinking because of property taxes. And you just, at some length now, said, if we're in a bubble, it sure isn't like the one that we got into in 2007. And you do think we have too many property taxes.
Yeah, I think the property tax, well, I think everybody that owns a house thinks the property taxes
or that they're too high.
Yeah, are way too high.
But you also don't think that because of that we're in a bubble-like
situation.
Absolutely
not. No, the economy is good. People have jobs. People are making money. Income is increasing. They still have credit card debt.
Do you think that the market is overvalued, undervalued?
No, not here in Illinois. Not here in Illinois. You ask any realtor out there, if your home is reasonably priced, anything under $500,000-$600,000 is flying off the shelves. Okay, and if it's reasonably priced, you're going to get 5-6 offers. Anything north of $600,000, it's a little slow right now. And I think when you talk to realtors, the realtors will tell you, summertime, summer doldrums. You've got the camp. You've got the vacations. People just aren't looking at homes right now.
This is on line one, Dave. You're on WGN. Dave, what do you want to say? Hi.
Hi. I was just saying, it's funny that I turned on my radio and heard you guys talking about this because I've been dealing with it all morning. I'm a real estate investor, and I've been talking to my tax lawyers, and what their suggestion was to my problem, which is I have rental houses in southern Cook County. The two that I'm dealing with right now are in Park Forest, and these should be homes that are worth, you know, let's say $120,000, $130,000. However, because the taxes are so high, they're all the way down to like $80,000 and $90,000, and that's what the comps are going for. Because when your taxes jump up to, what, $9,000, the average buyer that's trying to get approved for a $90,000 house can't absorb.
Wait a minute. You said this is a house that should be worth $120,000. What are the taxes in southern Cook County on that?
Without the homeowner's exemption, we're at $9,000.
That's nuts.
That's after fighting my taxes every year.
It's ridiculous. I mean, it's 5-6%. So again, he's an investor. He's not living there, so he doesn't get the homeowner's exemption. So think about if you're renting a home, right, Mr. Landlord here?
So then the rent goes up.
The rent goes up. So yeah, it's a pass-through. Thank you. It's a pass-through.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, renters who say, oh, this doesn't affect me, you're wrong. You're paying the landlord's rent.
Grab your checkbook, baby, because it's coming.
Well, you know what my lawyer's advice was? And they said, you're kind of in a bad situation, but everyone is. All of our clients are yelling and screaming about it.
If it's any consolation.
Yeah, they said, hold tight and wait and see if once Joe Barrios is gone, the next guy comes in and does what he actually says he's going to do. But that, to me, sounded like a horrible business plan.
Yeah, but no, well, you know, I'm out of time. I really appreciate your listening to the call, Dave. But I do think that if it is Cook County.
It's not just Cook County. It's all over.
Tax problems. Then this election may bear fruit along those lines. David, I got 18 seconds.
Yeah,
what are you doing?
Real quick, we July 27th, reverse mortgage loan seminar with Orion Samuelson and his wife Gloria out at Huntley at Del Webb Huntley. Go to reversedavid.com. It's free. We've already got over 75 people signed up. Bring your friends, family, coworkers, and neighbors. Bring your kids. Kids, if you're listening and your parents live in a home that's paid off and you're writing checks for thousands, $2,000 a month, it's getting tiresome. Go to reversedavid.com. We're answering all of your real estate questions regarding reverse mortgage loans. And that's a place to be. 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock, and there's snacks, refreshments being served, John.
And Big O's going to be there.
Big O's going to be there. He's going to help me promote it.
ReverseDavid.com.
ReverseDavid.com, and you've got some live reads coming to help promote it as well.
Good to hear. Thank you, David Harker.
Thank you.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
I have a request.
Here's John Williams.
I want the lake temperature, I believe it's 73 degrees. Then I also want the temperature down by your toes when you're standing in the water. I was swimming in the Great Lake, Michigan this weekend, and when you're skimming along on the top, it's brisk. It's cool. That is not a warm body of water, let me tell you. But when you go down where your toes are, it's like a lot cooler, and I like to swim underwater when I'm swimming. So there I am swimming underwater, and then I zoom along the sandy bottom of the lake, maybe 8 feet down, 6 feet down, and as I'm zooming along there, holy cow, is it colder. It's not just cold. It's like, wow, what happened?
I'm surprised you even put your whole body in that water. It's so cold.
Yeah, well, I don't have any choice. I mean, it's all attached, but it's very cold. But once you get used to it, and the beaches were packed this weekend. Everybody went to the beach. It was a great weekend, I mean, for opportunity to do things, except 4 o'clock yesterday when my family arrived for my mom's birthday party, which we'd set up on my deck, and it started to rain. But enough about me. Otherwise, it was a lovely weekend. Hope you enjoyed the taste. Hope you enjoyed the Jimmy Buffett concert. Boy, did they crank that sucker. Hope you enjoyed Def Leppard and all of the things that happened this weekend. I walked over to Wrigley Field. They've got that park at Wrigley, you know. A little patch of green over by Clark where they do community events. They do yoga in the morning, and they show videos and movies up on the screen at night. And they showed the World Cup match between Croatia, our Croatia, and France. And Violetta, I'm sad to report that Croatia lost.
Oh.
Although it looked close. I mean, we were nip and tuck for a while there.
With France?
Yeah. Well, it was 1-1.
Well, yeah, first half, I guess. But then...
First half.
Let us have it.
Then they blew them out.
Well, 4-2.
It was 4-1 at one point.
Yeah, but we had a mini comeback.
Yeah, we got a goal.
And when accident. I say we, I mean we, the Croatians.
Us Croats.
Croats.
It's kind of fun to watch a sporting event at 10:30 on a Sunday morning.
Isn't it?
With a whole bunch of people on a screen like that. So when France scored, maybe there's, you know, 500 people there on the lawn. And the crowd went, wah! But mostly the crowd didn't go. Because mostly the crowd was rooting for Croatia. They wanted Croatia, the underdog, to, you know, come up and win. And for the first 10, 15 minutes of the match, France is on defense. Croatia's pressing, pressing, pressing. And you think, wow, something's going to happen here. And they scored early on, as did France. And you thought, we're going to have a big scoring game here, too. 6 goals scored, we kind of did. But it just looked like Croatia was going to be able to hold their own. Then later, France said, okay, now we're going to turn it on. And there were times where, like, all of a sudden, France just goes, okay, we're just going to run down the field really fast and pass the ball a couple times, and you're screwed. There's nothing you can do about this. France did feel dominant. I'm really looking forward to the home run derby. I want our big boy Kyle Schwarber to win. Javi Baez is the most electric player in baseball, but Schwarby, wouldn't it be fun if he won the home run derby? I hope at least he wins the first round or two, advances along the way. The home run derby is, oh shoot, now I just lost my sheet of paper. Is that tonight or it's tomorrow night, I think?
Tomorrow. No, it's tonight.
Is it tonight? Yeah. Go, Schwarby. President Thomas Jefferson will join us after the news at 2:30 just to promote the upcoming show and answer a couple of questions. I have some things to ask him about that we've never asked him about, and it doesn't have anything to do with the current politics. I believe Steve Bertrand's newscast that you just heard moments ago was one of the most remarkable newscasts I've ever heard. There have been times in this administration where I was just so flabbergasted, I was sad. The first time he went on about calling Senator Warren Pocahontas, I was just sad. I know he gives nicknames, and I know he can be a bully, and if you punch, he'll punch back 10 times harder. But when he did that and people cheered, the only emotion I had was I was just sad for everybody involved. And I felt that way today. I was kind of amazed, but I was just sad. I thought, oh, no, no, there's the Russian leader, and he's standing there, and he meddled with our sacred election, and you're asked, who do we trust, U.S. intelligence or Putin? And he sided with Putin, and I was just so sad by that.
You know, I'm going to use the word, and I mean it. It's it would have been unimaginable for me, really, to try to say, imagine a president standing next to a Russian leader, asked if he believes in his FBI or the Russian leader, and the president, whoever he is, saying they both have good points.
It reminded me of what he said after South Carolina, you know, both sides. But no, not really. we didn't meddle with our election. They meddled with our election. That's what the multi-count indictment from the Department of Justice was after the president left. Tough timing. Didn't want to cancel the trip. But just in the movie, the president then turns to his Russian counterpart, and he says, nothing is in the music source, a la Aaron Sorkin. Na, 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 na. Nothing is more sacred than a free people, you know, blah, blah, blah. But you know how that would go. And he would champion American values and free and independent elections. And, sir, you've meddled with our election and you'll have a price to pay. Da, da. But no. No. He goes, well, you know, what about the servers? What about Hillary's servers? Nobody was asking about Hillary's servers, Jack. You'll get your turn. But right now, just answer the question. Department of Justice, Russia, pick one.
And I mean, it wasn't a hard choice. That's
no,
the thing.
No.
And words don't matter much to this president, so it's not like he could have just said it then, backed away from it later or whatever. But, I mean, it was not a hard thing to say.
Besides, remember, I think this distinction is not trivial. Meddling is not the same as collusion. Meddling is what the Russians did. Collusion is what maybe the Trump campaign could have done. The president says there's no evidence of collusion yet. Fine. But there sure was meddling. There's no doubt about that. That is, America, Americans, and the American intelligence community believe that. They've indicted 12 more Russians.
Well, for a total of what, 25 or something like that, Russians?
Absolutely.
And so, again, he's standing in Helsinki next to the Russian president saying that the investigation that has led to 25 of that Russian president's people being indicted has been a disaster for his country.
Yeah, this wouldn't happen in Russia. He said, this wouldn't have happened in Russia. No, I don't think it would have, because they don't have a free and independent press. It reminds me a little bit. Let's just, for the fun of it, do the John Mulaney piece. John Mulaney said about President Trump when he was, I think, a candidate to Stephen Colbert. He said, I'm an optimist. And so where people get real worried about what the consequences of this president will be, blah, blah, blah. At the end of the day, I feel good about America and I like our chances. Granted, we have this president who's utterly unpredictable and we've never seen anything like that before. But he said it's sort of like, well, I'll let him tell it.
To me, it's like there's a horse loose in a hospital. I think everything's going to be okay, but I have no idea what's going to happen next. And, like, none of you know either. Like, we've all never not known together. And on the news, they try to get people. They're like, we have a man here who once saw a bird in an airport. It's like, get the hell out of here. This is a horse loose in a hospital. And we're all like, it's not good.
There are worse things. But there are worse things.
Yes, but it's confusing. Yes. Because every day we just have to follow the horse. And some days it's like, the horse used the elevator. You're like, is the horse... You know those days where you're like, is the horse smart? And then we're all just like, why hasn't the horse catcher caught the horse? And then the horse is like, I have fired the horse catcher. And you're like...
Well put, John Mulaney. Okay, this is... the question put to Vladimir Putin. This is the question that was put to Vladimir Putin. Why should Americans trust you?
For President Putin, if I could follow up as well. Why should Americans and why should President Trump believe your statement that Russia did not intervene in the 2016 election, given the evidence that U.S. intelligence agencies have provided? And will you consider extraditing the 12 Russian officials that were indicted last week by a U.S. grand jury?
Well, I'm going to let the president answer the second part of that question. But as you know, the whole concept of that came up perhaps a little bit before, but it came out as a reason why the Democrats lost an election, which, frankly, they should have been able to win because the Electoral College is much more advantageous for Democrats, as you know, than it is to Republicans. We won the Electoral College by a lot, 306 to 223, I believe.
306. Elif, What was the Electoral College total in 2016?
304 to 227, John.
If I ever become president and I don't win the popular vote, I am not going to botch the electoral vote. When people ask me what the electoral vote is, I'm not going to get that wrong. I'm not going to have to put at the end the little rejoinder, I believe. Something like, it was almost, no, I'm going to know. I'm going to know what I won by. All right, this is cut four, Elif. Trump was asked if Russia is responsible for what's happened. This is cut four.
Mr. President, you tweeted this morning that it's U.S. foolishness, stupidity, and the Mueller probe that is responsible for the decline in U.S. relations with Russia. Do you hold Russia at all accountable for anything in particular? And if so, what would you consider them that they are responsible for?
Yes, I do. I hold both countries responsible. I think that the United States has been foolish. I think we've all been foolish. We should have had this dialogue a long time ago.
Okay. Let's do cut six, Elif. This one, I think when the guy is asking the question, you'll hear the translator chime in. It'll interrupt him, but you'll be able to hear it, I think. This is cut six. Notice the part of the question that Vladimir Putin does not answer.
Did you want President Trump to win the election, and did you direct any of your officials to help him do that?
Yes, I wanted him to win because he talked about the need to normalize U.S.-Russian ties.
It's the end of his answer. There's two questions. Did you want President Trump to win? And that's really interesting. That's getting lost a little bit today. Granted, the analysis is only a few hours old. But everybody's been saying, did Russia have a horse in this race, a dog in this hunt? Were they rooting for somebody, or were they just there to try and disrupt?
You can't say horse after playing that comedy bit.
Did we have a horse in this hospital? So Putin was quick. He didn't. He was like, oh, yeah, with thumbs up. We wanted Trump to win. We wanted Trump to win. Why? Because he was for improving relations. Okay, good. And did you direct anybody on your staff to disrupt the election? He never got around to answering that. Cut seven. This is Putin's proposal to cooperate, to help us with our little investigation.
Going back to the indictments of 12 Russian security services, I need to look into it. I'm not really aware of what's behind it. But the president did raise this issue. Now, here's what I can propose. We do have an existing treaty between Russia and the United States for mutual facilitation on criminal cases.
I don't know how he said that one with a straight face. He said, I'm not really aware of what's behind this. Meddling? What meddling? What meddling about this you speak of? He was unaware of this. He doesn't know anything about this, but we're going to look into it. And, you know, we do have this treaty that was signed before 2000 where if there's a criminal case in one country or the other, we will help with the investigation. So if Mueller reaches out to us, we'll cooperate with his investigation. That's something that we've done before. And in fact, we'll have some of our guys come over and look at your servers.
Yeah, we can help.
And I'm like, oh, no. You have helped enough already. Lord, the last thing we need is the KGB to show up in person. We know you're already listening in. Just stay put. We don't need any more help from you people. Oh, man. They should have given each other a little fist bump, and we will help you too. Booyah! But that didn't happen.
Just the cherry on top.
I don't know. I don't know what was the most... I don't know what the biggest cherry of that was. I think it was when, at the very end, the AP reporter said, who do you trust, U.S. intelligence or the Russians?
I agree, but that is a hard question to answer with the president right
now. It's awkward.
It is not.
No, it is. I thought the same thing.
You are the president of the United States. You are a world leader. If you aspire and hold that job, you should be up to saying, even if you're finessing it, you should be up to saying, my government has indicted his people, and that's a serious problem. We can work together on other things, But yes, this concerns me. It did happen, according to all of the people I've hired to look over U.S. intelligence. If you're the president, you're
take that, Violetta. Who you work? Whose side are you even on, Violetta?
You Croatian fan.
My God.
I'm glad I riled you up a little.
I just think it's the idea, you're right.
That it's hard. It's not hard.
It's hard if you are. This is how Donald Trump works. He develops a personal relationship with Kim Jong-un or with Vladimir Putin. And
or Theresa May. He did it with Theresa May last week.
And they're buddy-buddy, right? So he is inclined to, at that, you're right, because there in Scotland, he said very good things about Theresa May, even though he just blistered her to the sun. So when you're standing next to that person, his M.O. is, he did this with all three of them, is to sort of massage them. So he backed away from that opportunity there. He positively did.
But you're right. As the president of the United States of America, that you expect the president to protect.
We're not Iceland.
It's awkward to tell your mother-in-law that her desserts are terrible. That's awkward. But it's not the same as if you're elected to lead, if you're responsible for people's security.
Hold on. I'm writing this down. Mother-in-law.
Desserts. Awful.
Awkward.
Awkward's hard to spell. Take your time.
We post a daily web poll question at WGNradio.com. It's also on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. Today's question is, every U.S. intelligence agency has concluded the Russians interfered with the 2016 election. Vladimir Putin says they did not. You have three choices. A, I believe the U.S. intelligence agencies. B, I believe Vladimir Putin. This was the conundrum that the president botched. You have the third option, which is the one he went with. I don't care. I'm more interested in what happened to the DNC server, which is your vote. Go to WGNradio.com. Look for the news click. Watch Micah and Joe. That's Micah Mateer and Joe Donlin weeknights on WGN TV News at 9. And to win White Sox tickets, listen to Steve Cochran tomorrow morning at 8:40. White Sox tickets for you from Steve. That's at 8:40 tomorrow morning. I'm done talking politics for now. Thomas Jefferson will join us, and it won't be like what you've just heard. In fact, did you know there's a medication you can take now for people who are too stressed because of all of the political talk? The severe anxiety people face these days is now called politosis. And there's a new pill you can take. It's called Eurelium Life 9000.
I was stressed all the time.
Today, more and more Americans suffer from politosis, and the midterms are 4 months away.
Every day I get up, go on Facebook, turn on the radio.
Symptoms of politosis include, but are not limited to, hallucinations, unexpected anger, loss of appetite, sneezing, wheezing, coughing, chest pain, and sometimes spontaneous human combustion.
I'd feel my chest tighten. I'd say, now look at this, to the dogs.
But now there's hope.
Now I take Eurelium Life 9000.
Handcrafted by serious people in lab coats, Eurelium Life 9000 calms, cools, and collects your thoughts when you start to talk politics. Take it as a liquid, gel cap, capsule, tablet, ready-to-wear patch, snortable powder, smokable oil, tonic, salty briquette, or suppository.
I like the suppository. So when someone says, hey, why don't you take your opinions and...
Side effects include nausea and blurred vision, loss of hearing, and loss of consciousness. Actually, that's also how it works. It blocks your hearing and vision. You won't be able to hear or see a thing.
Now, I don't mind talking politics.
Don't take Eurelium Life 9000 if you plan on operating heavy machinery. Talk to your doctor before using Eurelium Life 9000 if you plan on getting pregnant, or if you plan on getting pregnant while operating heavy machinery.
My doctor says untreated, politosis could lead to debilitating Trumpitis or Bernie Sanderia. But not anymore.
For early onset politosis, ask your doctor about Eurelium Life 9000.
Plus, it's gluten-free. I like that.
By the way, you know that Mbappe guy? Mbappe, the French soccer star, Kylian Mbappe?
19 years old, right?
Are you going to do the story about him?
No.
$500,000 he made at the World Cup. He's going to give it all to charity. He's donating his $500,000 to charity that he's made. Mbappe's gift is estimated to be approximately $500,000 US, and L'Equipe says that other members of the French team could follow suit after learning of the 19-year-old's generosity. You know, when something crashes and you go, oh my God, what a disaster, now they can't do their business, that's because people were so much business was coming in.
Right.
So you don't want that, but you also, if you had your druthers between your site crashes or nobody goes there, which would you pick as a businessman?
The whole Amazon Prime thing is just a remarkable thing to me.
We were at Whole Foods yesterday, and they said, are you an Amazon Prime customer? We are, but we haven't linked our app.
What? You got a link.
So that, I got to get a password, I got to get the phone out, we got to do the thing. And so we haven't gotten around to it because that will take me about 3 days of constant labor. And
but I was at Whole Foods and I scanned mine last night.
On your phone?
Right. So now I get, beep. Although I don't, they haven't notified me how, I'm supposed to have $10 to spend on Prime Day for free.
So today you could
spend
be spending 10.
You get 10 to spend.
Really?
Yeah.
I got to get Brenda to do that.
It's hard. You know your app store is on your phone, right?
Are you done talking on the radio?
Yep, cheers.
All right, thank you, Steve Bertrand. This is John Williams. Before we go to President Thomas Jefferson, just real quick while I've got you over there. Kevin, home run derby tonight, right?
That's right. Eight-player format.
So how many total players in home run derby?
Eight players.
Oh, yeah, it's eight-player format, so I thought maybe it was 8-8. But so, okay, I'm going to let you enjoy that.
Yes, no, I'm sorry, John. It's a playoff bracket now, so they've changed it a few years ago. I think I like this version of it better than what it used to be. So it's head-to-head matchups. It's round by round. So right. Javier Baez, for example, is the sixth seed. He'll face Max Muncy of the Dodgers in the first round. On the other side of the bracket, Kyle Schwarber will face Alex Bregman from the Astros.
So we could have a Cub versus a Cub in the championship.
Yeah, we could.
Who's going to hit more home runs, Baez or Schwarby?
I think Schwarber will.
I do, too.
I think Baez's swing is sort of, there's a lot going on there. And it's working for him, obviously.
Oh, he's electric.
Yeah, no question.
He's a very fun player.
I think that's part of it. So on that aspect, like, well, Baez, he'll rise to the occasion.
He does everything.
If you actually look at technically and mechanically, he's kind of got that long swing where Schwarber's a little more compact. And when you got 4 minutes to hit as many balls out as possible, I just think Schwarber's swing is a little more easy to repeat. But I wouldn't be that would be fun if they face each other.
Here's Baez at home run derby. For the first time in home run derby history, he hits a triple and then steals home.
And they count it inside the park homer.
Yes. And then tags the pitcher out.
All right. I'll talk to you more about that later. But cool. you like Schwarber?
I like Schwarber. I think a lefty is going to win. And Bryce Harper is a lefty. And Baez faces a lefty in the first round. I think a lefty will win. So I'll go with Schwarber for you.
President Thomas Jefferson.
Before you do, I know the president's coming on, John.
President Thomas Jefferson.
I know, Mr. President, forgive me. In the headlines, I don't know if you heard, but I just threw in a story that a woman was indicted by the federal government for working on behalf of the Russians and joining political groups here in the U.S.
Yeah.
Part of the Russia probe, it seems. A little bit more we're learning now. This woman, her name is Maria Butina. She tried to, according to the New York Times and the documents unsealed today, tried to broker a pair of secret meetings between then-candidate Trump and Russian President Putin in the 2016 campaign. So this was not just someone infiltrating. I think the line I used at the bottom was high-level officials. Apparently, it was presidential campaign Trump trying to arrange secret meetings with Vladimir Putin.
And that's... Did that spin out of the Mueller investigation?
Well, it comes from the Justice Department, obviously. I don't see that it's completely... the charges were filed by the Justice Department National Security Prosecutors and not the Special Counsel.
Okay. Well, this is another layer then. 243, jump in as much as you need, Steve Bertrand. President Thomas Jefferson is listening to this. He's the third president of the United States. He wrote the Declaration of Independence. Mr. Jefferson, apologies. We appreciate your patience, sir. Welcome again to the show.
Good day to you, citizen.
I hope that you're not offended by making you wait. I suppose there's a certain protocol and the president should go first.
That's true, but since I've been dead for more than 200 years, I have time on my hands.
Actually, making people wait was a big issue over the last week or so because when the Queen was to meet our current president, the president made her wait. She was standing there. And when the president of Russia was to meet the president of the United States, the president of Russia made our president wait. And I think in each case, it's a bit of a power play.
I did this myself, sir. Anthony Mary was the British ambassador to the United States. He came here with extraordinary reluctance. This would be 1802 or so. He thought he was in the middle of nowhere in our new national capital in Washington, which he was. It was a village that had great future potential, but was essentially a wilderness place during my presidency. And he thought of himself as the most senior diplomat from the British Empire coming to present his credentials to me. And I kept him waiting for a long time. And when I finally appeared, this is from his report to the King George III, I was wearing an old coat that was too short for my long arms, and my linens, he said, were none too clean. My hose were down around my calves and ankles.
Oh, no.
He said I had that I was disheveled, and that I had a this I did not try for this. I had a bit of scrambled egg on my sleeve. And he was offended and wrote a report saying that he had been snubbed and deliberately disrespected by the third president of the United States. Oh. So, you know, all politics is a form of political theater. And keeping somebody waiting is a sign that you're more important than they are.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Or that you want to demote them in their own eyes.
By the way, when you did meet that British ambassador, you didn't have a giant, long red tie on by any chance, did you?
I did not. We did not wear ties in my time, and I always dressed down, especially as president. I dressed really more elegantly at Monticello than I did as president, because as president, I wanted to remind the Federalists, you know, the party of the monarchy, but also all Americans, that I was the first citizen. But I was by no means their king or their monarch, and we should really break from those bad habits of European deference and social hierarchy and pomp and circumstance.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Whenever I talk to you, I'm always just reflecting on the current era, and I'm always learning about yours and trying to, you know, borrow from then and apply it now. We're going to have a conversation like this on stage at the College of DuPage at the Mackinich Performing Arts Center on August 18th. It's a Saturday. We've added an extra show, so now there's a show at 10 in the morning.
Why? There's popular support for us.
We have never not sold out, so 10 a.m. and 1 p.m., are the shows. And if you want to get
tickets,
how
we would finally fail is if Hamilton were giving a talk across town.
Well, there is a big musical, and we're always up against
this whole Hamilton phenomenon is deeply upsetting to me. Not because he's popular, that's fine, although that shows that the people who think so have never read a single line of his work. But, you know, he was a monarchist and a militarist, and he thought that the actual citizens of the United States were a rabble. So why people respect such a being, I just don't know.
I was listening to the soundtrack the other day. It's pretty good, by the way.
You too.
I don't know if you've got it on Spotify there, but it's really awesome. But here's a guy. You know who I want to see a Broadway show? I think it would be fun. I think it would be intriguing. Benjamin Franklin. Who is more fun than Benjamin Franklin? And brilliant.
And he is worthy of your respect. Yeah. He's one of the greatest men who ever lived on the planet. He's the man who tamed lightning and first understood that lightning is a form of electricity. Think how many lives that he has made better by his lightning rod, which is preventing buildings from being burned down in thunderstorms or bifocals. Or take his Franklin stove, which was the most efficient heating device ever invented in the history of the world. And, you know, most chimneys take most of the heat straight up. He found a way to keep most of that heat within the room, and in doing so, ameliorated the condition of mankind. That was the point of the Enlightenment, to ameliorate the condition of mankind. He, not Hamilton, deserves a musical.
Okay, although my producer, I shouldn't call her out on this, but Elif just whispered in my ear, didn't I hear that Benjamin Franklin was kind of a jerk? Was he a nice guy? Was he friendly? Was he collegial?
He was not a jerk. He alone got us the French Alliance that made us win the revolutionary battle for independence, at least sooner than we otherwise would have done. He was the most popular man in the world. He was a philosopher, a raconteur, the creator of almanacs, the creator of the United States Postal Service, the creator of the first circulating
library. Jerk. We got it already. You know, I was reading a little bit about the revolution the other day, and a couple of things impressed me. One was this point you're making, that I don't think we remember well enough how indebted we are to France for our independence. As much as we like to lord the victory in World War II over them, I think we should remember that we wouldn't be were it not for France. Would you agree with that?
Of course, not only did they supply an enormous amount of spirit to us in the hands of people like Lafayette, this young man, he was still a teenager, an aristocrat who had many other things he could have done with his life, and he came here to help fight for American independence because he knew that the future lay with democracy and freedom and bills of rights. But furthermore, if it hadn't been for the French fleet we would not have been able to bottle Cornwallis up at Yorktown. We won that great final battle of the Revolutionary conflict when Cornwallis and his 10,000 or more troops were stuck on the peninsula at Yorktown. If there had not been a French blockade there,
yeah,
they would have been able to escape, and the war might have gone on for several more years.
You know, the other thing that, so I'm reading about this, and I go, oh, that's fascinating, oh, that's fascinating. I was reading about literally the strategy of and the fighting of the Revolutionary War and how young some of the patriots were. And that was the other thing that impressed me, not just the soldiers themselves, the volunteers or those that were mercenaries, but some of the principal players, the founding fathers, John Paul Jones, Sam Adams, Jefferson, Washington, etc. You know, when we think of our political leaders today, we think of people that are much older. But I think relative to today, you guys were a pretty young set from the revolutionary time through when you all held office.
Franklin was the eldest of us. He was a full generation older. I was 33. Hamilton, in his late 20s during this period. Even Adams, who was 8 years my senior, was only 41. I mean, the lifespan in our time, of course, was much more truncated than it is in yours, thanks to your better medicine. But the founding fathers were largely men in their early middle age by our standards, and you would call them young men, according to the longevity of your own age. It takes idealists and men of a certain recklessness to commit revolution, and so that's part of it, probably. But as you know, a revolution concentrates the mind, and so it brought out in young men the deepest aspirations. John Adams wrote a letter to his wife saying, this is the kind of thing that Solon or Lycurgus or Cicero would have wanted to be part of. And we live in this extraordinary time where we get to be these men who are pulling the levers of destiny itself.
Elif looked it up at biography.com. Here's what biography.com says. Dig a little deeper in the history books, and you may be surprised to find the genteel, wise, portly old Franklin had an uncontrollable weakness for the opposite sex. As a teenager, he made advances toward his good friend's mistress. That was the end of their friendship. And let's not forget, in his early 20s, he fathered an illegitimate child whom his wife, Rebecca, would eventually help raise. Biography.com, sir.
I have no desire to have a quarrel with your able and handsome producer, but I would urge her to read more than 2 minutes before determining Ben Franklin's character.
Last question for you, sir. Remember, you're going to be on stage with us at the College of DuPage on Saturday, August 18th. Go to WGN
Radio. That's Meriwether Lewis's birthday, sir.
WGN WGN Radio. This is the most important part of this conversation. Go to WGNradio.com/events. to buy your tickets now, or call 630-942-4000. WGNradio.com/events, or call 630-942-4000. Give me 40 seconds on, would you, I don't know what the right question is to ask this guy about what President Trump did with President Putin today. Do you have anything to say about that, President Jefferson?
I'm an isolationist. I think we should mind our own business. Russia is a very, very, very long way from the United States. I see no reason for the president of a republic to go meet with a dictator anywhere on earth. If Napoleon had sent his finest yacht and a crew of men devoted to my luxury, I would not have gone to Paris to meet this despot. And I don't see any reason for any American president ever to treat with a person who does not commit himself to human rights.
WGNradio.com/events. We're on stage with Thomas Jefferson. You get to talk to him, too. Thank you, sir. It's always a pleasure.
And yes to revolution. And don't come as a monarchist, or I will. And if you play the soundtrack from Hamilton, I will walk off that stage.
Memo to self. All right. Thank you, Mr. Jefferson.
I love you, friend.
Today is one of those days. I think Ro Khan is going to be on fire. Oh, what a show. I can't wait to talk to him in just a minute. In fact, we'll get to that in just a second here. Before we wrap things up, the Dow has been ticking up a little bit lately, and I've been wondering at home if the Dow is up or down for the year. Elif, producer Elif, where's the Dow for the year, please?
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 326.59 points at 25,045.81 points. From 24,719.22 points on the first day of trading in 2018.
I thought we were down for the year. We're up. 326. Rose next on GM. If Rokan had a big green button on him, today would be the day to hit play.
You said he's on fire. Is that because Amazon Prime was down? Is that what you're thinking?
No, that's not what I was thinking, Anna DeWantis.
No, that's not what I was thinking either.
Oh, God. I had that moment where I, right after I watched the president and his press conference with Vladimir Putin, and I press conference, I'm going to use that lightly, because they strong-armed a guy out of the room beforehand. I don't know if people saw that.
Yeah.
They literally manhandled, I don't know who he was.
It was a reporter from The Nation who had some kind of a sign, and exactly what was on it, I'm not quite sure.
But thank God for that last reporter. That AP reporter doesn't ask that question, and really the meat of this thing is not so hefty.
Yeah.
Hung in the room.
Yeah, both the Reuters and AP reporters from the U.S. did an amazing
job. They nailed it.
And that's, I'm glad he called on them. I'm glad that that got out. Yeah. We are going to have Brett Baer on with us to talk about this. You know, they've got Fox News was able to get an interview with both Putin and with Trump after the press conference.
Who didn't? Fox did?
Fox did.
Wow.
So Chris Wallace sat down with Putin, and both Tucker and Hannity sat down with Donald Trump. So Brett has seen some of that and will tell us what's coming up with that. And also, you know, where does Fox News fall on all of this? Because I like a lot of people in our business, we started, you know, reaching out to our sources right after this in Washington. What are you hearing? What are you thinking? Republican sources primarily. I mean, I know what the Democrats are going to think. I don't need to ask them.
Sure.
I wanted to hear from Republicans. Are you concerned that the post-World War II world order ended officially today? I mean, this trip basically took us, you know, from the beginning, from fighting with NATO and calling out Theresa May and the newspaper and all those sorts of things. And then, you know, cutting off the queen while they're walking in front of the guards. That was an accident, but still, it was weird.
Then he pushed her in a pond. I thought that was out of line.
Yeah, kind of smacked her around a little bit. Yeah.
And then sitting down with our chief adversary of the last 70 years, right, since the end of World War II and the beginning of the Cold War. We didn't trust the Russians during World War II. They were our allies out of necessity, not out of choice.
Right.
But when the war ended, they became our number one strategic nemesis and have been ever since as the Soviet Union and as the Federation of Russia. It does not matter. It's the same coin, two sides of the same coin.
Well, I'm really interested in what you're going to talk about, what is the Fox analysis, because right afterwards, Ro, I went to, I had CNN up, and there was Anderson Cooper immediately afterwards, and AC says, this is one of the most shameful displays of U.S. president ever. So then I immediately clicked over to Fox News. I wanted to see what Fox News was doing, and they weren't coloring it yet, and I didn't know what their take on it was going to be. Are they going to bust him or not? You know?
The strongest words I heard initially were surreal. People called it surreal over at Fox News, but certainly didn't condemn it the way you were hearing. And then even Republicans initially, you didn't see them coming out in force, but slowly they have.
You're starting to see them come out.
Yes, you are.
Yeah. Have a good show, you guys.
Thanks very much.